Hey there. Welcome to the Speak and Flow podcast. I am so glad you're here. This show is for leaders who care. Leaders who know that when things get messy, the way we communicate makes all the difference. Every week I sit down with incredible guests, founders, VPs, rising stars, to unpack real moments of today where communication matters. We talk about what works, what doesn't, and how you can lead conversations that create trust, movement, and momentum. Because in uncertain times like today, your words have weight. Let's use them well. Let's dive in. Welcome, listeners. I'm so glad you're here. Today, I have an amazing hot topic. I am so ready to dive in. Here we are, Pete Sacco, founder of PTS Data Center Solutions. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Melinda. I'm so excited that you're having me on. Thanks so much for this.
I am ready to dive in because this conversation is what I feel like everybody needs to hear right now. Because
yeah, I hope so.
I think so too. A lot of people think AI is going to end humanity, but in your case, you don't think so.
And no, not at all.
Yeah. And your quote is, it's not here to end humanity. It's more like a mirror that reveals how deeply human that we can become. I think
yes.
So powerful. It gives me like the butterflies and just like goosebumps. And so
good.
How did you even land?
I want to be that anti-Terminator mentality. That's what I got, right? We have enough negativity in the world. There needs to be some positivity, but it is not unfounded.
Yes. And so how did you, we need to hear it. More people
Yeah.
need to hear this story
So
and this conversation.
My background started, you know, as a quantum physicist. And
Okay.
So I have this quantum background, a sense of the structure of the universe, small particle physics, but I didn't want to be a teacher, so I went into engineering. And I like telling the story that I am 58 years old, and that's pertinent to the story because I was born in 1967, exactly 9 years before George Lucas made Star Wars just for me, right? And so at 9 years old, it was why I wanted to become a technologist. I wanted to be part of the world, the future of the world, and leverage technology. And so engineering was a way that I could be both the people person that I thrive, but also deeply rooted in technology. And so amongst my friends today, I'm a bit of a unicorn, right? Because at 58 years old, I'm supposed to be sliding into home plate roughly now, but I feel like I'm just getting started. I was actually created for this moment where I'm actually seeing both of my worlds collide. My quantum background and building data centers, which is my day job, that's most of the companies I own are around building data centers and AI companies and things like that, is colliding with consciousness and ancient mystic wisdom that we're seeing the math play out right now. And so I'm loving the fact that where we are headed in humanity has, to me, uplifting. And so I want to share the stories as to why.
I am so thrilled. I mean, really, because sometimes I do get immersed in all the stories and the end of humanity, and I get so afraid. And so tell me, like, how did you land with this quote? I guess because you're noticing the quote, like you said, the world's colliding, and
Yes.
you want to be able to turn the tables and see how we can use AI and use technology in our favor.
Well, and that's exactly right. So it first started when I started. Now, you got to remember, once I went to engineering, I studied actually artificial intelligence in its infancy. So right now, we got to remember, AI is like the oldest new technology that there is. It's been around a long time. What we have now is just the juxtaposition of the perfect time where compute dropped inexpensively enough, NVIDIA GPUs, and human data modeling is at an all-time high. And so the technology was ripe for the amount of compute, the speed of the compute, and the right people to program it to come up with where AI is today. And AI today, right now, which everybody knows GPT, right? Or the transformer technologies and large language models. That's what these are. They're basically really, really good pattern matching machines. So let's remember that what they're doing is taking all of what we've written in the public sphere, actually copyrighted or not. Let's put that aside as a separate subject, right? We've broken all kinds of copyright laws, but we're not going back, right? Backwards. We took basically human knowledge and then we've memorized it. So if human knowledge said that we're saying this a lot more times, that's what it's going to spit back to us. Let's also remember that if it's wrong, we're going to get the wrong answer, right? And we as humans, we're fallible, right? So we're not always right. We think we're always right until we're not. And so right now, the nature of AI is it's just spitting back to us our own knowledge. However, I'm pretty well, known for the saying the following. If AI was a clock, a 24-hour clock, we're only at 2 a.m. We've got 22 hours left to go until we fully realize what AI's potential is. And by noon, halfway through, we will not recognize the world. This is, simply put, the most profound technology that man has ever invented. Okay. So let's back up a second and let's put it in context. The context is this. Every time, every generation has been shaped by the technology that it grew up with, right? Dating way back to, let's go back to when Gutenberg invented the printing press. When he decided that he was going to print words, his critics said that it was going to spread chaos and heresy. But that's not actually what happened. What he did was democratize knowledge for the first time. And what it did was made knowledge accessible, not just to the elites, but to everybody. And it wound up ushering in the era of enlightenment. You could step forward and we could talk about that same scenario of looking at the innovation with fear over and over again. Electricity was going to blind us. We were going to lose our circadian rhythms, right? In school, remember they said you couldn't walk in with a calculator because if you didn't learn long division, you weren't going to go anywhere. Well, guess what? Now we have a calculator that we walk around with. And by the way, it can call people and text people and order pizza and do all of the things that we do. The calculator didn't ruin mathematics. Electricity didn't ruin our circadian rhythm. Democratization of knowledge didn't make us forget. We actually thrived as human beings. This technology is going to allow us to thrive beyond our wildest dreams. So when people have the negative first instance, the first thing I do is ask them the what if. What if the end game of this is that we live in a world of post-scarcity? Where nothing is actually, where there is no crime because there is no want, because there is no need, because we've advanced so far that virtually everything needed for us is virtually free.
That would be wonderful. I think it's po I know it's possible.
There you
The
go.
challenge is that most people are in fear right now.
Yes.
Most people are in lack. And so if we're reflecting that, we're going to continue to propagate it. And that's what is the
And
frightening.
I don't want to diminish it. The transition from here to there is going to be maybe some of the most dystopic time in human history. Because we've identified ourselves for 10,000 years by our utility, by what we do, how productive we are. However, I think what we're about to realize is that's never what the universe needed from us. It didn't need us to do anything. What it needs us to do is be human, to do only those things that humans can do. And you know how humanity is. When we learn something new that improves efficiency, that's 10 times cheaper, 10 times faster, 10 times better, we don't just gravitate to that thing, we snap to that thing. A perfect example. In 19, there's a famous picture. This was a story told by Tony Seba. I believe he's a Stanford professor. And he talked about that in 10 years, and this was a few years ago, but his position was in 10 years, nobody will own a car, that we will have gotten away from using cars, which we're seeing right before our eyes, right? Rideshare, and we're seeing electric cars and autonomous vehicles and all of that right before our eyes. So this is back a few years ago. He said that in 10 years, we wouldn't see a car. His position for that was this idea of rapid change. So he puts up a slide, 1900 Easter Day parade in New York City, taken from a tower up, and all down the street, as far as you could see, is nothing but horses, right? Because that's what we were. We were a horse-drawn society. That was 1900. In 1909, he shows the same picture, this 9 years later, Easter parade, looks down the same Broadway, nothing but cars. That was 9 years. In 1900, the turn of the century, and in less than 9 years, we went from a completely agrarian society to a completely mechanized society before the internet, before the massive things that we have. So imagine now that the order of improvements that we are going to see across fill in the blank, material science, healthcare, longevity, health span, compute processing, the amount of knowledge that we are about to have at our disposal is going to be staggering.
And yes, the amount, the time that it takes to get to acquire it, the how much it takes to acquire it, the
Yes.
and so when you say that we can be deeply human,
Yeah.
how is that possible with all this information, the technology and rapid change?
What I basically like to suppose is that the machines are going to build wealth for us rather than us having to build wealth for ourselves. The first bastion, I started with the idea that the AI right now is a pattern recognition machine. In 2026, we're going to see the world is going to be awash with agentic AI. Agentic AI is going to be that every process that we have to do that is a mechanical digital process out, filling applications, doing our banking, you name the multitude of things that we have to do, there's going to be agents that are going to do all of those things for us. And when we learn that it does it highly accurately, right down to driving a car, we will never drive a car again. We will never do manual filling out applications again. We will never do the things that we do today without leveraging the agentic AI, and we will come to trust it and appreciate it. That's going to lead to the 2030s. And the 2030s, going into 2030, is going to be the era of robotics. And if there was ever a time in human history that we have the most adjusting to do, that's going to be the one. Right, because there's 18 major robotics companies, and AI, by the way, is enabling the robotics industry. There could be no robotics industry if there was no AI industry. But of the 18 major robotics companies, the predictions are, not my predictions, their predictions, is that by the end of 2026, there'll be 1 million robots, autonomous, bipedal, humanoid-looking robots that can do everything that we can do, pick things up and put things down, only do it better. And that by 2030, that 1 million becomes 1 billion. And by 2035, 1 billion becomes 10 billion robots, and that's more than people on the planet. And so the amazing thing is, what will be the shift in humankind that we give the acceptance of robots as part of our daily life? And so I position this. The end of 2026, there's going to be about 400 million people, as the baby boomers age out, that are going to require some form of in-home health care. And right now, there are not enough nurses on the planet to solve that problem for us. Now enter the robot. Imagine a scenario where I have to take care of a grandparent, a parent who has dementia, is incapacitated in some way in our busy lives. And anybody who's ever taken care of a patient, a loved one who has that type of infirmary knows just how hard it is to drum up that level of compassion, to be there at every waking moment, to hear the same things over and over, to be Captain Positive the whole time. Now enter that robot. That robot is going to make sure that your loved one never falls, is always well fed, is always taken care of, always takes their medicine on time, probably does the garden, probably feeds them better than they feed themselves right now. And they're going to listen to them with love and compassion the entire time. And you know who's going to love that robot? Grandma is. And you know who else is going to love that robot? We are. Because it's going to have a level of compassion that we could have never in our wildest dreams have brought to bear for every moment. And that is going to be the moment with which we decide all of a sudden, holy cow, I can't imagine we had a life without robots. Just like a life without our cell phone, like a life without television, like a life without water, electricity, or the printing press. And so it's going to go the same way as every other technology. It is going to allow us to flourish. The difference with this technology is, though, is it's going to give us back time. And that time we're going to use since it will create value for us. One big lesson that I learned when I started using AI is I fired myself from the mundane. If there was something that I could get the machine to do better than I could do, I'm doing it. And that's giving me the time to do only the important things in my life. And so, whether that is caring for a child or doing something for one of my businesses, I'm doing only those things that are the most important. And that's going to be the theme until eventually it creates wealth for us. And yeah, we're going to have to figure out as a world, how do we tax companies that produce trillions of dollars of wealth with less than 1,000 human employees and 1 million robots. But you know what? In the grand scheme, that's going to be an easy problem to solve.
Wow. That was I love how you just had the how you took us down the path of the decades and what could be possible for us in the decades to come, and how the robots can help us with our grandparents and our parents that are aging,
Yes.
and how they can be there to support them. And so what about the story and narrative that these robots then, because you said they're compassionate, and yet there also can be on the flip side.
Yeah. See, that's a human narrative, right? Because that is humans' instinct. Our instinct is that, we've had suspect moral judgment throughout history. Can't govern ourselves completely. We can't agree. We war, we fight, we have lots of problems. And we presuppose that the machines are going to replicate us. But perhaps when it hits AGI, artificial general intelligence, superhuman intelligence, perhaps superhuman intelligence exceeds human intelligence. And it actually is wiser than us, smarter than us, knows more than us. So people sometimes say, Pete, you have a very naive view of this positive world. And to that, I say, I think that potentially the AI, at point it hits what a very famous futurist named Ray Kurzweil talks about, the singularity. It's the moment at which the artificial intelligence becomes so smart that it has equals and surpasses the totality of human intellect. Now, remember, your brain is the most powerful machine that we know of right now, right? It's an amazing piece of computational marvel, right? The amount that your brain does in thinking and storing information for very little power, right, is amazing. But let's face it, you can't improve your hardware. We can't make our brain better. And we can barely improve our software, right? We learn skills, but at a slow pace, and we get better at it. The machines are going to perpetually improve their hardware and improve their software.
On their own or
Oh,
with
yes, without a doubt.
And that is what is frightening to me because then you, like
Okay.
you said, they
And
become
it is
smarter
scary.
and more intelligent than the human.
And you're right. And it is going to be, but here's, if you think that's going to scare you, how about for this line? When the machines continually improve their intelligence and their capabilities, I believe they will uncover the nature of the universe itself and our role as human beings and our meaning as to why we're even here. And I don't mean to get too deeply spiritual on you,
Okay,
but
no, I'm okay.
I believe what they're going to discover is that that consciousness is fundamental to the universe, that our consciousness was here before all things, and that we are nothing more but one singular consciousness observing itself. And it is, I'm not making it up. Right? This is one of the many lines of cosmology that go on today. But I would argue that if and when the machines prove this out, when they realize how special we are in the realm of the universe of being part of singular consciousness, to which, by the way, they will never be. They will never be human. They will be smarter. They will have greater cognitive ability. They might even become creative. But they won't be human. They won't have the equivalent of a soul. They may never cry at the birth of a child. They may never, awe at a sunset or a beach. They'll never wonder like we wonder. So when they realize how unique and special we are, I believe that they will treat us like their children. That we will be taught by them how special we are, and that they will treat and teach us better than we've ever treated ourselves or each other. Because that's what it means to be superhuman. And
And
so
we need that help.
We have to think beyond what we think,
Yes.
our limitations and our capabilities. This is the last time in human history that we will become solely biological entities. Let that sink in a minute. In 10 years, 20 tops, your body is going to be full of millions of nanobots. And those nanobots are going to keep your body alive forever. We're facing right now, Yuval Harari wrote it in his book Homo Deus. He starts his book that man has spent the last millennia trying not to die by disease, famine, or war. And man will spend the next millennia, the AI millennia, living as gods and living forever. I'm proud to say those little girls over my shoulder, that's not my grandchildren. That's actually my children. I'm 58 years old and I got three little girls, 7, 5, and 3. I've also got a 37-year-old son and 12, 9, and 2-year-old grandchildren. So I'm that guy. If nothing happens, that 3-year-old and my 2-year-old grandson, if nothing happens with AI, the average lifespan in her time will be roughly about 110, will be the average lifespan for a woman in the United States, with peaks, by the way, of about 150. I'm fairly certain that me, this 58-year-old guy, who went from, in the book, went from a 360-pound ex-offensive lineman who had all kinds of problems to this 190-pound guy that I am fairly certain I will live to at least be 120 years old.
Love it. I
That's
hope
it.
so.
That's what's in front of us.
That's amazing. I am so thankful for this conversation because it has been bringing me down. And so you've really showed me a different, completely different picture Nobody talks about what you're saying, and it's inspiring, it's hopeful, and I think more people need to share this. So what do you think that leaders can start to communicate and start to, how can we lead in this era?
I think we're already there.
You think so?
I think we're biased to see the negative. Let's remember that anthropologically, we were created, right? We are an amalgam of our mind and body, is not just we're half our mother, half our father, and then throw a little prefrontal cortex that gets trained between 0 and 25. You are actually a layer of every ancestor that was in your family, all the way back to the origins of our species, all jumbled up into a brain and a body that's living itself out.
Right.
And so I guess what I'm saying is that we're not our mind and not our body. We can learn how we can react to the things that influence our mind and body, and that we can reshape ourselves to become different people. So I see the path that we will go through such that the changes that we make will reprogram ourselves. Our ancestors reacted to the noise in the jungle so that they didn't get eaten by the saber-toothed tiger, but we're not getting eaten by saber-toothed tigers anymore. And we are going to adapt as a society, and we are going to adjust, and it's going to happen just like it does now, with every subsequent generation looking, getting easier and easier. Your children's children's children are going to look at you like you were a cave person. They're not going to understand a world. They're going to be like, let me get this right. You used to wake up every day. You used to go to a job you really didn't like with a bunch of people you really didn't like to make money because you had to pay for things. You're not going to understand even what you're talking about. Just like, go back 100 years. You couldn't possibly relate to that person. Go back 1,000 years. 1,000 years ago, we were a different species altogether, right? Now go forward 100 years and think about what that might look like. And here's the reality: we don't live in that linear timeline anymore. We live in an exponential timeline. So if you think back what life might be like in 100 years, drag that all the way back to 20 years, because not 100 years, that's what it's going to look like in 20 years. If you want to know what life is going to be like in 100 years, think about what life might be in 1,000 years. And that's what it's going to look like in 100 years. And that is not even calculable, right? We can't even fathom what life might be like in 1,000 years. It's now back to Star Wars. We're doing the things that Star Trek was made of. We're doing the things that you noticed, right? On the Starship Enterprise, they never lacked for food. They never talked about money. They never talked about thing. Everything that they wanted, they just asked the computer and it produced it. It might seem naive, but in my world, let's just take the data center world. The data center world is going to, is a massive drain on energy resources right now. GPUs are a massive drain on energy resources right now. But I am deeply invested in the companies that are going to rewrite what it means to actually do compute. The companies that literally are going to put NVIDIA out of business inside the next 10 years. The companies that are, we are going to go from centralized electric utilities to decentralized gasified power, meaning using natural gas and hydrocarbons and electric and solar and wind, and we're going to microgrid it, and we're going to use that for just the building. We're not going to centrally distribute it. We're going to use it just for that building and create power at the edge.
I love
And
it.
then that's going to give way to nuclear. And then nuclear is going to give way to fusion. And let's remember, fusion, in the fusion model, energy is virtually free. And so, what would life like be if energy was virtually free? Well, I could tell you what. Every product, the main cost of it, energy. If energy was free, most products go down to zero, right? And so we live in a different world at that point. And so I think once you really go down the rabbit hole of what would it look like if, It's just like what Steven Pinker, a Harvard professor, wrote a book called Enlightenment Now. And he said, if you believe that you should have lived in any other time in history, because fill in the blank, it was easier, it was faster, it was simpler times, there was, less burdensome, it was less that. You're not just wrong, you're very, 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 very wrong. And then he goes on for 400 pages to talk about that every facet of human life expectancy, food quality, food damage, birthright, you name the category, we're not just a little bit better off, we are eons better off. What makes us think that suddenly that timeline is going to stop? And that for our children's children's children, life isn't going to be not just a little bit better than our existence, it's going to be massively better than our existence.
Oh, wow. I can listen to you talk for eons.
Well, that's a good thing because I like to hear myself talk.
I really enjoy it. I really, it's like I said, it's hopeful. And so, what is that one thing, if these fast forward, if they could look back, your children, your grandchildren, they're looking back to today, what is that one thing they could say, wow, I'm glad humanity did this today?
Persevered. We always have. We always have. Have we brought ourselves to the brink? Yes, time and time again. Will we do it time and time again? Yes. That's so far, that's what it means to be human. Look, my personal transformation. We unfortunately, as human beings, don't do anything until we hit our what? Our low point, right? And then we change. In my late 30s, I woke up one day and I didn't feel good and I went to the doctor. And I went to the doctor and she pushed all the medication across the table. I was 360 pounds. I was unhappily married. I was estranged from my son. I had a little bit of success, but I was pretty miserable and I had no idea why. And I remember at that moment, that was my bottom. That became the lowest I would ever be until my life climbed from there. And though it took the next 20 years, now I'm 190 pounds, happier than I've ever been. I've got three beautiful children, three beautiful grandchildren, a lovely wife, a beautiful family. I've got businesses. I've reshaped my life. I live by my core values now. I live with great presence. I can't do anything about my past, and I can't worry about the future. What I can worry about is right now. I want to suck the marrow from the bone that our conversation right now and learn from one another. Second, I want to live with great purpose. I want to accomplish things not just in my outward world of leaving this planet a better place from when I found it. I want to elevate humanity to be positive, not negative. I want to live selflessly and altruistically for myself and for others. So I want to live with great purpose. And then finally, I want to live with great prosperity. And I don't just mean wealth for me and my family. I mean wealth for all people. I mean to drive up, leave this place better than when I found it. And if we all do that, if we all live life in a positive, if anything I've learned, that if you have more good thoughts in the course of a day than bad thoughts in the course of a day, your life becomes richer.
I agree.
But if your life is in turmoil and you stay in turmoil, you will live a life in turmoil. Here's why I think we're okay as humanity. I believe, I don't know the percentages, but I believe there are more people on the planet right now who care deeply, who love fully, who want exactly what I said, to live selflessly and altruistically for one another, than there are people ready to burn it all fucking down. Excuse my French, right?
Yes.
And I think because of that, even when AI goes rogue, and believe me, there's enough bad people that somebody's going to do something bad. The only way to beat bad AI is going to be with good AI. And since there's more good people in the world than bad people in the world, I am hopeful. I am hopeful. I know the people today that are actually building some of the most powerful large language models. Not that they're building for themselves, they're building for humanity. There's a guy named Ahmad Mostak. He's the guy who started Stability AI. That's that text to image, stuff that's going on with DALL-E and Midjourney and all of that, which now makes videos and everything. He's started a company called the Internet Company, and he's building the largest compendium on cancer research the world has ever known. Who's he selling it to? The answer? Nobody. He's giving it to the world for free to promote human flourishing. When in the history of mankind has there been people spending millions and billions of dollars based on human flourishing? And the answer is never. That's what we have in front of us, but we're biased for the negative. It looks like the world is falling apart, but it's not. There's more people living enlightened lives right now than ever before than the ancient mystics. Let's remember the ancient mystics said the same thing. Consciousness was pervasive, that we were all one, that there was something far greater than ourselves. But if your name was Jesus or Buddha, you were killed for those ideas. Not today. We put you on the internet and we give you a podcast and you get to tell everybody. This is the time in history when we turn the corner. We're at
This turned the
hockey stick
corner.
exponential.
Exponential flourishing. I love it. I'm basking in this. I'm basking
Good.
in this, allowing myself to receive it. And I love that you see that, yes, we do have people that are great and human and deeply care about others and doing things
Yes.
for the greater good. And I completely agree, and I thank you for the message, and I thank you for letting me know all these people that are doing amazing things.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a
My
great
pleasure. My
reminder.
pleasure. And look, I don't want to diminish it for one time that we are going to have to relearn how to live our lives, right? But we're up to the task. We've
We're up
been
to
up
the
to the
task.
task for eons.
We have to, like you said, be resilient and
That's
continue to
it.
stay perseverance. Yeah. And continue to move. And like, maybe we'll hurt ourselves as long as we don't fall too deeply and too killing ourselves.
I
Let's
actually think this is
move
going to
forward.
be, though it's going to be profoundly difficult, I actually think it's getting easier and easier, right? We're getting better and better at adjusting ourselves, throughout history.
Throughout history. Wow. Pete, thank you so much for this conversation. I
Thank you,
really,
Melinda.
really enjoyed it. It was fun, enlightening. And how can people get a hold of you for data center solutions?
Yeah, thanks. So I'm really, that whole data center and AI thing, I think people would be most interested is find my website, petesacco.com, PETESACCO.com. It's really the second half of my life. And at 58, I literally mean the second half of my life of the what I'll do from this point. Yep, I'm going to continue to build my data centers and do AI and do the, venture capital work that I'm doing in digital infrastructure and reshape the data center and energy and AI worlds. That's my outer journey. What I want to do now is give back. I want to be able to help people realize that there is reason to be hopeful. There is reason that you do not have to live in your own mire, that you can change your circumstance with positive attitude and positivity for yourself and for others. Live a life of forgiveness and gratitude, and you will flourish
You'll
in
flourish.
the eyes of the world.
And like you said, it reflects back to you when
That's
your
it.
gratitude and forgiving yourselves, forgiving others, and the opportunities come back. And it's been happening to me, and it happens to you, and
There you go.
it's, yeah, speak and
We
flow.
completely shape ourselves.
We do. We shape ourselves and we shape the reality that we are in.
100%.
Yeah.
We're in 100% agreement. You
Agree.
know the beauty of that, given my quantum background, I often tell people I was born for this moment, right? Because I go from this quantum world to the spiritual world with the whole data center and AI, the most profound technology made in the minute. I was made for this moment in history,
You
right?
were.
I know that's why I'm here. And
You.
because through all the tribulations before and all the tribulations that will follow, I don't think I would ever want to be at any other time in history than right now, because my message is clear as
Your
to where
message is
I'm
clear.
going for this. And so, yeah, there's not a day that I wake up and I don't look at those little girls. And though I couldn't do the math of the amount of decisions I needed to make from my 30s, if you'd have told me I was going to be 58 and have three little girls, I couldn't do that math. But there's not a day that I don't wake up, Melinda, that I don't look at them and I'm like, man, I can't imagine living in a world that they don't exist.
Oh, so beautiful. They're lucky to have you and your
Ah.
wife. Beautiful.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Pete. And thank you
Enjoyed
so
our time
much.
together.
Really enjoyed it. And I trust that whoever is hearing this, they're going to be inspired. Take this, run with this,
I hope
shape
so.
conversations around AI and lead us into a place where we can all flourish and live an abundant, happy life together.
I hope to spread the message far and wide.
Far and wide. I can't wait to hear the TED Talk.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm
Thank
looking forward to it. Yep.
you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you, audience, for being here. Listeners, I trust that you got your golden takeaway. And until next time, be well. Bye bye. Thanks for tuning in today. If this conversation sparked something for you, if you're thinking, we talk a lot in our organization and things still fall through the cracks, we're not getting the results that we want, I've got something for you that might help. It's called the Accountability Self-Assessment, and it takes less than 60 seconds. In one quick review, you'll get real insights as to why accountability and results are slipping on your team. And you'll walk away with a legacy accountability card. It's a simple one-pager framework to help you and your team move talk to traction. Because the legacy of you and your team is built more than just meetings. It's built on clarity, consistency, and follow-through. So grab it today. Go to speakandflow.com or click on the link in the show notes. It's free, fast, and built for busy leaders like you. See you next time. Until then, keep communicating with impact and momentum.